and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. I am back. Been a little touch and go with some sickness, and we also got kids home from school with the snow, and also boil water advisories just hitting every card or every spot on the bingo card to start off 2025. But I've got Mike Barber here joining me today to talk a little UVA basketball. Speaking of bad bingo cards, they've hit a lot of bad spots themselves. Mike, thanks for joining.
Yeah, the balls are not popping their way is a fair way to say it. And a lot of continuations, I think, Preston, of some problems we've seen over the years and not getting better this season.
Well, let's get into it. For those that stayed up, dared to stay up late into the night, Virginia tipping off at just after 11 o'clock, around 11:06 last night at Cal. Of course, their neighborhood friendly ACC foe, Cal, all the way on the West Coast, losing this one 75-61, which I'm dubbing as their worst loss of the season. You look at this coming into it, Cal number 120 in the net. I know in the net rankings and how the quads work out, that only goes down as a quad two loss, but it feels much, much worse than a quad two loss at this point. Another second half collapse for this Virginia team. And that's kind of where I want to start, because at the half, it was, kind of both teams were not playing well. It wasn't great basketball that we were watching. Both teams struggling to shoot the ball. UVA had done a good job on their leading scorer, Andre Stojakovic, with his dad Peja in the crowd, as they like to show on the TV a couple times last night. But Cal blew UVA out of the water pretty much from the get-go in the second half, 40-29. Virginia was outscored by 94 points in all of their seven losses this year. So this is kind of a continuous trend in the second half, and all seven of those losses have come by double-digit deficits in the second half. So, Mike, I know it was a late game, but just kind of this continuing trend for Virginia, where do the second half struggles come from?
Yeah, this is going to sound maybe like an oversimplification, but I did rewatch the second half this morning. I didn't stay up last night to watch it.
Good man.
Yeah, I think, and it boils down to, sadly, the fact that they're not very good. That sounds like way too simple, but I think what you're having is teams coming out and scheming things up and trying to adjust to what Virginia does. And then they get on the floor and they're saying, hey, I don't think we need to do this. I think we can just do what we're comfortable with, because these guys aren't that good. They don't have athleticism on the perimeter. They're not getting into the ball. They're not disrupting us. They're not able to penetrate the lane. They're not establishing on anything on the low block. So I think, and I maybe this is a criticism of opponents, I think maybe they're overcoaching at the jump, and they're saying, here's what we're going to do. Here's our chess match. And they get out on the floor and they're saying, this team isn't very good. Let's just do what we're most comfortable with. And it's why you're seeing teams not just pulling away in the second half, but pulling away, playing their style of basketball, pulling away comfortably, because I think they're just easing into the game and saying, it's almost like high school ball, right? You haven't played a team before. And it's a non-league game, one of those early, and you play somebody you don't know about them, and you're trying to scout and get, and then you get out on the floor and you're like, hey, we're just better than these guys. I think everybody in the country is realizing that they're better.
Is that just a sign of respect for the logo, just because of what Virginia's been?
Yeah, I think partially, but I think it's true in all of college sports. Like, I think if you're a coach, you don't want to get caught with your pants down. Right? You don't want to come out unprepared and come out with a lazy game plan. And, the coaches who succeed in college athletics are the guys who don't sleep at night, and they're watching every wrinkle and every action. And what could you do off this action? And what did other teams do that ran similar actions? And that's how you put together your game plan. But I do think sometimes when you were the better team, I think we saw it with Memphis a lot, right? Like, coming out and doing, and then just realizing, hey, we're better. Like, let's just play and we'll win. And so, yeah, there's a respect, but I think there's just a respect for the game. And that's the way you coach. And that's the way you prepare. It'll be interesting as more of this goes on film, if coaches don't see what I'm seeing and think, hey, maybe let's come out and do what we want to do. And if they force us, then we'll start tinkering.
Virginia off to their worst start since the lame duck season last year for Dave Leto, all the way back in 2008, 2009. Real quick, those second half struggles, I mentioned that, and there's seven losses. So against Tennessee, outscored by 21 in the second half. Against St. John's, 12. Florida, 14. SMU, 10. Memphis, which was a 2-point loss, to remind you, they were outscored by 11 in the second half. So, kind of to your point there, then Louisville 15, and then Cal 11 last night. And when I see second half struggles, almost in any sport, it's indicative of bad coaching because halftime is where coaches make their bread and butter. That's when you make all your changes and how do you modify and kind of attack that second half. And it seems like continuously in the second half, teams are, like you said, realizing, okay, we can just play our game. We don't have to change anything. But there's no changes on the other sideline either for Ron Sanchez.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think he's limited because the team's not very good, right? So yeah, you'd like to see them come in and try something else. Well, there's not much else they can try with this roster. They can't penetrate the lane. That's a fact. And I think we saw, I mean, right, he played Day-Day Ames at the start yesterday. He played TJ Power early in the game yesterday. So I think he's trying to find some things. They want to stretch the floor. They want to penetrate to the rim. They don't have players who are capable of doing that. So basically, what you've got is you can throw the ball in to Elijah Saunders, who's been great and had a double-double again last night. You can do that, or you can work it around the perimeter and try to free up IMAC for some threes. He did not have a good night last night. I don't know that there's a whole lot else out there that you can do. And yeah, I'm oversimplifying. There's little adjustments that can make you more competitive, and maybe there needs to be some better moves there. But in terms of combating what a team is doing to them, there's not a lot in Ron Sanchez's bag of tricks because of the roster.
Now, it's a very thin roster at this point. And Ron Sanchez, I asked him earlier this week just about Dade Ames because we've seen his minutes completely kind of crater off a cliff in the last couple of weeks. And basically, he says he's a scorer. He's not really a point guard. He's got to get better passing, distributing, not turning the ball over. Got to get better defensively, basically everything else besides scoring. But you look last night and subbed in the pretty early on in the first half, and then had a, let's be honest, a really bad foul to foul a 3-point shooter. Subbed out pretty quickly after that. Subbed in the second half, had another bad foul, and was subbed out almost immediately. So the minutes never really came for Dade Ames last night, and only played 4 minutes. Anthony Robinson, I know some people have been frustrated with the lack of minutes for him, just because at this point, what are you wasting? Throw something at a wall, see if it sticks. But yeah, like you said, it's very limited. There's no secret option coming off the bench that's gonna kind of spark things for them. And TJ Power played 12 minutes. That's the most he's played, but still 0 points, 0 for 1 shooting, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 foul, 1 turnover. Like, that's not the greatest stat line in the world. And he was a -8 in those 12 minutes. So just the options are not there for him right now. Real quick, you were talking about Isaac McNealy, 3 points on 1 of 8 shooting, only 4 3-point attempts. Fewest points he scored since his freshman season. He did a couple times in his freshman season. The most recent was in the ACC tournament against Clemson. What are you seeing with McNealy right now and just kind of his overall struggles to really get going offensively?
Yeah, he's been statistically good. He's on pace to break Kyle Guy's career UVA record for 3-point percentage. It's just there are so few options. Teams aren't going to let him get 12 looks. He's not going to get 9 open looks from three. Teams are selling out. Now, Ron Sanchez has tried to do some things using him as a screener, see if guys stay with him off the screen, see if he can come free. But there's just, and Isaac worked in the offseason, shooting off the dribble, getting himself to be more than a catch and shoot guy, using screens. But when you don't have a lot of options, there's just not much you can do. And that's why two things, TJ Power being a bust is huge because he was supposed to spread the floor and take some of the attention away from McNealy. It's not happening. Jalen Worley leaving. He was the guy who was supposed to penetrate, kick back out. You can't get the defense to collapse because you can't penetrate. You can't get the defense to extend because you've only got one real shooter. So that doesn't really leave much room for a guy like Isaac McNealy to navigate. Now, he's got to do more. Ron Sanchez told me an interesting thing this week. He said he thinks Isaac's at his best when he decides he's going to score before he gets the ball, which almost is counterintuitive to like good basketball, right? Like you want to see what the defense doing, you want to see what's there. And but he said, like, Isaac's got such a quick release, he's such a good shooter that he's got to commit himself in his mind to, when I get this ball, I'm going to shoot it. And then you can always decide at the last minute, hey, it's not there. But so he says Isaac needs to hunt his shot more. He needs to be more aggressive. Is that great basketball? No. But is it what this team probably needs? Yeah. Like Isaac McNealy, like you hate to say, he probably needs to shoot the ball 18 times. Like it sounds crazy, but he's got to do that. And if he gets hot, I mean, we've seen, what was it? North Carolina Central last year, where he hit three threes in the first 3 minutes. Like, not that he's going to do that every night, but he's got to have the chance to do that because that's the only place Virginia can excel. Look, I thought in a badly played half by both teams, they were right there for a half. Can they sustain that? The only way you can sustain that is if you shorten the game, and you shorten the game by a few defensive stops and a few McNealy threes, and all of a sudden there's a 6 minute segment that you owned 9-0. That's how you're going to win, because they're not going to blow anybody out, but they didn't blow people out really when they were good. And that's just the way this team is constructed.
Yeah, with McNealy, that's a really good point by Ron Sanchez because you can almost see it when he's out there in the court. When he's coming curling around those screens, there's a split second where you can see, all right, he's gonna go straight up with the shot, or he's just gonna, take it, get in the 3-point stance, kind of just evaluate and like pass the ball on. Like you can see it like in his head and him thinking about it when he's coming off that screen.
Yeah, there are times that he gets the ball, Preston, that it feels like you're watching a walkthrough, right? Like, when you walk through a basketball play, you don't shoot it till the very end. Like, you're not looking for the first shot. You're practicing against air. It's getting
Gotta
the
have
motions
five
down.
passes.
Right. And that's
Yeah.
what it feels like. It feels like sometimes he's caught the ball to send it to the next guy because they're running the offense. And it's like, hey, the coaches, the ball can't stick. The ball needs to stick with Isaac McNealy because there aren't a lot of other options. Look, go inside to Saunders. That's your number one, to me, way the offense functions well. Go inside to him, see what he can get. If he can't get it back out to McNealy, and McNealy shoot that ball. Like, again, this isn't the highest level of basketball, but they don't have the pieces to play the highest level of basketball. They need to simplify it, look inside, and kick it out to McNealy.
It's interesting you mentioned Saunders there. I wrote a piece on the Saber.com just about the kind of symbiotic relationship that his offense has with Isaac McNealy's offense. And we've seen just the past couple of games, and whether it's matchups or what it is, they haven't been able to go back into Elijah Saunders the same way they did against NC State when he got so many mismatches and he was just kind of tearing them apart on the inside. They haven't been able to do that as much lately. And you can see the kind of effect that it has on the rest of the offense because they're not getting that interior presence. And like you said, they can't get penetration. So that's their only way to get the ball in the paint to spread it out.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were talking about with coaches and game planning. To me, that's the number one thing you take away from Virginia, even more than McNealy's shot, because look, you can play solid defense on the perimeter. The only thing you've got to make sure is that they don't get on a roll in the low block with Saunders and Coffey, and then they can spread things. Like, everything could go from there, and that's what you want to cut off. And I think teams have done it. It's interesting because before we get off that, Andrew Rohde had a great game. Right. And like Andrew Rohde's played really well, and not just scoring. I think he had 12 or 14 last night, but he had six assists and what, one turnover? He's doing a nice job moving the ball. Like they're getting something from the point guard position, but it's not the dribble drive penetration. And so the only way it works is what are they getting in those assists? Are they able to get the ball inside? And that's where it all starts. And I think coaches and good coaches recognize, hey, look, yeah, maybe McNealy gets hot and keeps him in a game, but if you can limit Saunders and make sure that's not a consistent look, there's really nothing that this offense is built around right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You tweeted out before this one, because Virginia Tech also out on the West Coast this week. Really winnable games for Virginia and Virginia Tech. We'll throw them in here too against Cal and Stanford. Both lost last night, and now both got to flip and play the other opponent. I feel like, someone asked last night, are they done after these two games? I thought they were done before that, honestly. You could pretty much stick a fork in them, barring any NC State magical run, if they lose both these games out in California.
Yeah, maybe it was the fact that I was in a good mood because it was my birthday, but I looked at the schedule for both Tech and UVA, and I said, hey man, like you can beat Cal and Stanford. It's a long trip, and there's all the other things that go into it. But I'm like, this could be, look, not the start of a run to an ACC championship, but the start of a run to the middle, which is where if you're Virginia, you aspire to be, right? And Virginia Tech, probably the bottom of the middle, is where you aspire to be. I really thought if you go out and play well in game one of this trip, you could get both. And all of a sudden, people can say, oh, Cal Stanford, not very good. But you went on the road and you have two ACC road wins. That's huge. That would be huge. And then to lose, for both of them to lose, for both of them to lose the way they did. Virginia Tech did the exact same thing, collapse in the second half. I think I counted the numbers. It was 85 to 58. Tech and UVA were outscored in the second half last night. That's ridiculous. Yeah, I think you can certainly stick a fork in them in terms of, I just don't see a path to improvement. Right. And that's what I've been saying all year was that, hey, don't count them out because you've got all year to get better. Right. You've got all year to find your identity, to get better, to be a team that can beat bad teams. And the ACC gives you a lot of bad teams to play. Like, that's the saving grace here is that you take Duke out of the picture, there's nobody unbeatable. You've got a bunch of teams at the top there after Duke that are good, but not great. Clemson's good. Pitt's good. Wake's good. I think Louisville's good, but none of them are great. Carolina's got talent, but they're not even good right now. So the schedule gives you so many chances to find yourself, get better, and save your season. But what I saw last night is there's no path to getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. You look for the signs because we've seen Virginia teams in the past kind of get off to slow starts in the season and really find their groove once they get into ACC play. And I know that players were talking about that going into ACC play. Like, look, we've done this before. Like, we can get back there. They haven't shown it, and they have not shown any. It'd be one thing for them to be getting close losses or something like that, but every loss they take is just backbreaker after backbreaker, and the signs of optimism aren't there. Real quick, crazy moment in the game last night. Right from the get-go, pretty much the clock just stopped working, and for a game that tips off after 11 o'clock Eastern time, that is about the worst thing that can happen, especially when it takes I don't even know if there's a running clock for how long it took them to figure out the clock, but it took way too long.
It did because I know because I went to use the bathroom. I was like, okay, it probably is just gonna be a quick delay, but I'm gonna run, use the bathroom. And I came back out and they were still in the delay. And I was like, come on, guys. And it's interesting, and you don't want to over dramatize it, but I thought Virginia was playing pretty well before that delay. Like they had hit a bunch of shots, they were knocking down some threes. McNeely hit a three, I think Rhodey hit a three. They were playing pretty well. Now, a little delay of the clock shouldn't change things. But it was an interesting storyline, if you will, where you were like, okay, this looks okay. And then this clock delay, and then they never got right. And I can't imagine it had an impact. I think it's just about them being not that good, and they had a little stretch, but it was interesting timing that like that happened. Everybody's annoyed, and all of a sudden they come out and they're not very good again.
It was a 11-0 run before the clock malfunction for Virginia, and it was a 10-0 run for Cal after the clock malfunction to tie things back up, like, or actually take the lead. It was
Yeah,
crazy.
and it does go back, when you say it that way, it goes back to what you're talking about coaching though, right? Because during that delay, you're in the huddle, you're with your coach, and whatever Cal did in that downtime was better than what Virginia did. Whatever Cal said, hey, we've got to change, Virginia came out and either didn't anticipate or didn't have an answer for. So it's another good point to where you started of here's a stoppage. What did you do? Like I always say, the best way if you're an AD and you want to evaluate, is a guy a good basketball coach? Not program building, not any of that other stuff. Is he a good basketball coach? Show me his success rate on out of bounds plays. Show me his success rate out of timeouts. Because that's your X's and O's. That's where I'm scheming and you're scheming, and we both get a shot at it, and what happens? And now look, sometimes guys miss open shots, blah, blah, blah. But overall, if you show me Buzz Williams, and I know he's nuts, Buzz Williams has a tremendous success rate out of bounds, under the basket, out of timeouts, it's because he's a great basketball coach.
Those are free plays. Those are plays where you can get the matchups and how you want it to set up. And
Exactly.
the good coaches take advantage of those moments. And that's just not something, honestly, not something that we've seen the last couple of years, really. I mean, the out of bounds plays have not really borne fruit for Virginia in the last couple of years. And I've seen a lot of other teams score against Virginia off their out of bounds plays. Or there was one play, I think it was last season, where they were able to get Isaac McNealy a three in the corner pretty consistently out of the out of bounds plays, but that's the only one in the last couple of years. And there's one this year with Elijah Saunders catching a lob off the inbounds that's worked like twice.
Yeah, I feel like they've had some like big moments, but probably not in the last couple of years because Tony Bennett always, delegated that to an assistant coach and then always gave credit, right? He said, "Hey, Coach Williford, that's his design on this." And again, so much of, and it's again, it sounds like I'm simplifying things, but so much of what this comes back to is they don't have great players on the floor. So you can draw up your play, but if your guy can't get himself open or can't knock down a shot, it doesn't matter how great your play was. But yeah, the success just isn't there, and that stoppage, that weird clock gaff, kind of accentuates the fact that, hey, given the chance to huddle up with your team, Virginia's not coming out looking great.
Sitting there at 11, going on midnight, going on 1 a.m. last night, seeing a lot of fans, getting texts from a lot of fans watching the game. It kind of a question hit me is, what are the reasons to watch this UVA basketball team going forward if the NCAA tournament is not a possibility? And I want to ask you that, but I want to take a break and we're going to come back and talk about that question because it's a very different question. It's actually something someone asked me on the radio earlier this week too. And so let's talk about that when we get back here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest is Mike Barber. We are talking about reasons why to watch UVA basketball going forward because it's a very weird dynamic because I hear a lot of times fans, and even sometimes me in the media, just you come off a bad football season and you're like, all right, I need something to kind of get the juices back flowing, get me some like good stories, like some good feel good stuff. All right, basketball's coming here. Virginia, they may not have the best team. It may not be 2019. We may not be cutting down the nets of Minneapolis, but there's something there. They're going to be in games. They might pull off a crazy upset. Who knows? What are the reasons this year, off to their worst start, not even in the vicinity of having a bubble wand to blow a bubble, to be in March Madness? What are the reasons right now that you have to watch Virginia basketball if you're telling a fan?
You're putting me in the spot of like a used car salesman, right? Like I'm trying to
It's
convince
essentially
you to
what it
buy,
is.
right? I'm trying to convince you to buy something that deep down I know you probably don't want to buy, right? That's the reality. Look, the reason number one is you're a UVA fan, right? And where I grew up, so I'm from the North. I'm from North Jersey. Yankee fans, we sold out Yankee Stadium when they were good. We sold out Yankee Stadium when they were bad, and we booed and we yelled and we complained and put the pressure on. Now that's pro sports ownership to say this isn't acceptable. Now looking back, I wonder, wouldn't they have responded better to empty seats, probably from a business standpoint in that model. But look, number one reason is you're a fan. Number two reason is you've got some players in this program that you want to keep. And if you bail as a fan and you these stands are empty, it becomes a lot harder to retain guys, right? And look, I mean, everybody kind of puts it in the foregone conclusion that Isaac McNealy is going to be there, right? He's UVA. He's from West Virginia. And if the fans quit on this team, what's his vibe at the end of the year? Elijah Saunders came here with an extra year. Well, what's his vibe if it feels like there's no support? So I think this is putting too much on the fans, but I would say the number one reason is, hey, you want to help this program any way you can. Right. If you're frustrated with the play and the coaching and the administration, well, you got to still do your part. And your part is to show up and to create the atmosphere. The number three reason, I guess, on the list is it's never too late for a great win. It's probably not going to be a great season, right? But you never know. And we have kids, so we get that. But like you want to be sitting in the stands when something cool happens that your kid remembers 10, 15 years from now. On any given night, Isaac McNealy might hit six or seven three-pointers, right? And then they may be in a game or upset somebody. So if you love sports, if you enjoy it, those are the big picture reasons. But if you're asking me specifically about this team, it's tough, man. Like they're not playing very well. They don't really have an identity. I don't sense a ton of support and confidence in the coach. It's a make or break time for Ron Sanchez. So it's a tough sell. It really is.
Yeah, the reasons I had down here, some similar to yours. Some of the young players, we got to see a lot of them last night. Jacob Kofi, Ishan Sharma both had pretty good games against Cal. Anthony Robinson. But the thing is, that used to always be the answer in bad seasons. It's like, all right, let's get the young guys some time. It can't be the answer anymore because those guys could just swiftly exit the door, just like, anyone can these days.
Right. And it's a vicious cycle because if you don't show up to support those young players, that only makes it more likely that they say, man, maybe this isn't the great atmosphere. Maybe JPJ isn't the venue I thought it was. It's the rolling ball that catches these programs up. And it's really hard to combat. Like, you have to put a good product on the floor to get the fans in the stands, but you have to have the fans in the stands to really be competitive. It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple other ones. Unfounded hope. Just maybe you're still holding on for a glimmer of that old basketball. Betting, gambling. If I know you can't gamble in the state of Virginia on a Virginia team, but maybe if you're a fan watching from outside, maybe that you have a betting interest in that. Yeah, there's not a ton. And like you said, maybe there's a good win later in the season. I think that's something, in that NIT season when they were, trying and scrapping to try and make the NCAA tournament, you had that probably one of the best wins in the last couple of years against Duke on the road in
Yeah.
Cameron Indoor. Like that was a great win and a win that a lot of people still think of fondly. There is not a ton of reasons that I can force someone to stay up till 11 o'clock at night and watch a basketball game.
Yeah,
Thankfully, they don't have
particularly
to do.
those. Right. Yeah,
Thankfully, you don't have to
particularly
do that
those
again.
games. Yeah,
Yeah.
those games, West Coast, bad opponents. And that's where the other where it hurts them that the ACC is down, right? Because it's not like, hey man, come out and support your team because they're going to get a shot at three or four teams that could be in the Elite Eight. Like, you don't have that, man. Like, you got Duke, and then you got a bunch of teams that are meh. Like, they're good-ish, but not that good. And the ACC didn't look good in the non-con. So, what were they like? It's interesting. Like, for the last few years, I think there's been an unfair narrative that the ACC just wasn't as good as other leagues, and I think it was wrong. This year, I think it's right.
It's
Like, this
absolutely
year,
right.
you know what I mean? You want to say the same things about, well, but no, like, you were bad in the non-conference. Your teams aren't that good. Nobody's going to be impressive other than Duke coming out of the league. Like, I don't think this is one of those years where everybody kicks the ACC and then they go and put two or three teams in the Final Four. Like, March isn't going to save you if you're the ACC.
Yeah, no, I. Yeah, the last couple of years, just like you, I've been like this league is not that bad. It's
Yeah.
just it got off to a bad start in the early in the year. This year, it's a bad start. It's going to be a bad finish. Like the
Yeah.
league's just not that good, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I talked to Brendan Marks from The Athletic about it on our last podcast, so we had some great conversation there. So I won't belabor that point too much. I did want to get into this whole Christian Bliss saga that's going on right now. And I asked Ron Sanchez earlier this week and kind of pushed him on it because it's been no update. He's day to day with his injury. And, we've seen him around the program, not really sure what's going on there. It's basically what Ron Sanchez said, when asked if Bliss is healthy, if he's ready to go, he said he's able to practice, but he also, quote, said he's just not feeling good enough to get on the floor. And that's a player decision. It's been 2 years, zero games played. What do you make of this whole situation?
Well, I think the most interesting thing, you did a great job, by the way, pressing Ron on getting an answer on that. The last time I talked to Ron, sort of off the record, not off the, but off the mic about Bliss, and he said he's really close. He's really, so the coaches have thought that he's on the way back. And I think there's a frustration now. I mean, look, let's say it what it is. Ron basically threw him under the bus, right? Ron basically said, yeah, he should be able to give us something, but he doesn't want to go out there. And it's his call, and we're not going to force him to play. You can't force a kid to play. You don't usually hear that. That's got to be a level of frustration on Ron's point. And I think that's where it is, right? I think it's a situation where they believe Christian can physically play. They believe that he could contribute something. He says, I don't want to go out there. Now, does he say, I don't want to go out there because he knows he's leaving at the end of the year? Or is he just trying to protect himself and not suffer an injury? Only time will tell. But that was a very interesting exchange that Ron had with you because he didn't sugarcoat anything. He basically threw the kid under the bus. And I don't know if he was trying to challenge him or spark him, but definitely worth watching where Christian Bliss ends up in all this.
Yeah, and hearing around the program, like they've told him like they need him when he's ready, like come back and play. Like we need you. And it's clear they need a point guard. And I wrote about all that on the Sabre.com this week. It's just like, for a decade now, Virginia's had consistent play at the point guard position, an all ACC level of play at the point guard position. They're not even trying to get to that. They're just trying to get to like maybe average, maybe just competent play at the point guard position, because right now they're just having to like throw things at the wall, and Andrew Rohde's kind of being shoehorned into a more of a point guard lead role, and he's been doing well. It's just not his natural position.
No, I think Rhodey's been really good, but it's not. Not only is it not really natural for him, it's not. He's not the point guard they need. They need the on the ball defender, the really pesky, the speed. Like that's what they need. Andrew Rhodey is a really good point guard in a different system, but here he's got to be off the ball, and but he's the only guy that is getting assists without racking up turnovers, so they've got to use him. But yeah, they miss Bliss. They needed this to be a big year for Bliss, and instead they're getting nothing from him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Real quick, let's transition football. A couple more transfers this week. They're up to 14, actually 15 with a long snapper that committed yet. Bryce Robinson from Kennesaw State. So Tyshawn Wyatt from JMU, offensive lineman, Fisher Kamak, defensive end from UNLV, and Kevin Wigginton, offensive guard from Illinois. Just real quick, your overall thoughts of this offseason for Virginia, how they've responded since what was really a disappointing finish to at 5-7.
Yeah, I think one, they've been better than I expected in the portal. Like, I think they've brought in good talent. I still think they have a lot of work to do on the offensive and defensive line. I think Wigginton's a nice start. I'm going to be super interested in what Tyshawn Wyatt does. JMU was really hoping he was hurt. I interviewed Tyshawn in the preseason about, could he get back? Could he get back? Could he play? And they were really hoping. There was actually, I went down to the Bahamas Bowl. With JMU, and there was even talk he might play that game because he was healthy now. I think he has a chance to be an impact guy. I still think they need more on the offensive line, more on the defensive line. Look, I really like quarterback. I really like the receiver they brought in for, like, I think they've done some really nice things with the money that's been infused into the program. The problem for UVA is they've got all this money now, not all, but they've got enough to be competitive. Good teams are going out and getting four or five guys with that money. Virginia is rebuilding its entire roster with that money. It just doesn't go as far. You don't get as much bang for your buck. So they've got to be smart, but I've been encouraged by what they've done so far.
It seems like a good money ball approach, just getting guys from different levels of play. They've gotten some Power Four guys. They've gotten some, FCS guys. They've gotten some guys from the Group of Five. It looks like a good mix, but I'll leave it at that. There's a lot more football offseason talk to come here on the Who's On podcast. And we will check back in on that later. But Mike, thanks for joining on, hopping on the Who's On podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that is it for the Who's On podcast this week. Remember to check out everything at thesabre.com. We got a lot coming up for basketball, but also baseball season just around the corner. We got some big plans for that. And also keep up to date with the transfer portal over at thesabre.com. And as always, follow the Who's On podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you find your podcasts. We'll see you next week here on the Who's On podcast.